This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Futuro.
I gotta say, though, just to start, to me, when you say the negatives and the positives of pregnancy, and I'm just like, there's no negative for me.
Yeah, I think also our perspective of nada que sea, you know, related to pregnancy is negative is definitely una perspectiva que los Latinos tienen, right? But if we talk about our feelings that are negative and not so nice and colorful, no quieren saber de eso, you know? And so that doesn't allow us to completely exercise our experience of becoming, of transitioning. And obviously we're in a pandemic, so that comes with its own set of feelings. I think for me with my child, I didn't have, you know, him during a pandemic, but I felt like I was living in my own pandemic because I didn't like being pregnant at all. I was like, this sucks.
Really?
Yes. I was like, esto es lo peor. Esto es lo peor.
Pero dime, what, because the first 3 months you were sick a lot or what?
Three months? El tiempo entero.
Oh, no. You were throwing up the whole time?
No, I was not interested. Here's the thing. Like, you can want to have a child and you can want this baby and you can want to be pregnant, but the experience might not necessarily reflect that. And people aren't interested in knowing those feelings.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, we're going to get real about pregnancy. Today, dear listener, we're going to break down the pregnancy journey from the positive to the negative, depending on how you view it. While some of us tend to view everything surrounding pregnancy with a glow of sunshine, there are very real issues that can be cloaked in darkness. Within the Latino community, the challenges people go through before, during, or after pregnancy are often taboo. Miscarriages, pérdidas, fertility struggles, and pre- or postpartum depression are rarely discussed when they're in fact very difficult to navigate. This leaves those dealing with these issues in isolation, forced to keep secrets, and left to figure these challenges out on their own. So how do we as a community better support women on the path to pregnancy and afterwards? The first step is having an open conversation. So no subject is off limits in this roundtable with producer Ginny Montalvo, certified birth doula Elizabeth Perez, and myself. We're going to jump right in to our pregnancy real talk.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about all things pregnancy today.
I loved being pregnant. I loved it. Maybe the last 2 weeks were like, yeah. But other than that, I would give anything to be like 5 months pregnant, like forever.
Right.
Yeah, and Jeannie's like, yeah, I'm good.
No, I mean, legit, I actually really enjoyed being pregnant with my first. And I mean, the second is fine, but other factors. But no, yeah. I really did enjoy it. But I definitely don't. I mean, first of all, we live in New York City. So like more than two is a little bit insane. But like, I don't think I'd do this again. Like,
yeah.
Well, but also you're pregnant in the middle of a pandemic and you've got high hormones and you're inside the house, you know. So, oh, my God, that's like a recipe for get out of my way.
Well, yeah, those would be one of the factors I was talking about that are definitely making this pregnancy a much different experience. But we're going to talk about that later. I want to get started by first asking about what you do, Elizabeth. Like, what is a doula?
Yeah. So a doula is a person that works with families that are expecting, that are having a baby. And they're there to guide the family, the pregnant couple, the pregnant person through that experience, right? Now, the caveat here is that I'm not a medical professional, right? So I'm not diagnosing you. What I can tell you is, oh, this sounds like this. You might want to check this provider out. And so we're a sounding board, right? The way that I like to think of myself and other birth workers in general is that we are the water that's filling the cracks in the cement, right? When it comes to your care. Mm-hmm. So your doctor, your midwife might be fantastic, but they're not necessarily readily available. And they're not necessarily going to give you the attention you might need in that moment at 3 a.m. or 2 p.m. when you're just like wondering what's going on. Mm-hmm. I really love that work because it's like in the quiet and the intimate of the night that you're kind of like, what am I doing? Right. And you can't say that out loud, but you can say it to your doula. And I'll tell you this, doulas love to doula. When someone says, I am a doula, they're committed to doing everything they can for you, even before themselves.
My firstborn was a scheduled cesarean. So we really didn't even contemplate a doula. But then I became friends with somebody who'd also worked as a doula. And then when it came time to go to the hospital, she was there to advocate for me. I just loved having somebody who was a woman who I could turn to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to tell you what happened with the birth of Jurema. So basically, right after I had the cesarean, they had to knock me out. And so by the time I came to, it was a couple of hours later, I hadn't seen my little baby girl.
Yeah.
I'm taken up to my room. And they brought Juju, who was teeny tiny, and they began to say, oh, she looks a little jaundiced. Typical. And if you know anything and you're prepared, you actually know the best thing you can do for a jaundiced baby is to
feed them.
So the first time the nurse said, we've got to take it. The second time, by then my husband said, no, you're not taking my baby again. You are not taking her and sticking anything in her ankle or in the bottom of her foot. Her heel is where they were sticking her. Mm-hmm. My wife is the mother. You are not her pediatrician. The baby stays with her mother.
And
you know, because you don't want to mess with Herman because, you know. But I just remember feeling like, thankfully he did that. And so that is when, you know, the question, why do we need advocates? Mm-hmm. It's because there is a kind of system that doesn't really listen to the moms, don't really listen to the women who are going through the process. Yeah. And so we have to be the ones to change that dialogue and that narrative.
And you hear the horror stories of the things that have happened throughout history. And I'm like, if somebody gave me a document to sign in the middle of labor, I'd be like, get it out of my face. Like, but I don't understand how those things happen.
This is bringing up a lot. So a couple of things, Maria, that you mentioned, you had a cesarean and then you were under general anesthesia. So yes, you were knocked out. You were not awake. And then you hadn't been with your baby. So that in of itself interrupted the physiological process that is necessary to form a bond between mother and baby. So in that moment, and also with Edmond, right? He might have not had the baby in his body, but he was having some hormonal stuff going on. He was like, hold up.
He's like,
this is my woman. This is my baby. Like, back
what
up,
are you doing?
You know? Yeah, so I call it, you know, super gendered in this sense. In that moment, Edmond knew that, right? The baby needed to be with you. As you said, the most important thing is to feed. And how do you get a baby to feed? You keep the baby with their parent. You keep the baby with the mom. Mm. So instead, like, if taking the baby from you to go test their blood, we can keep that baby on your chest and do the heel stick there. And that would be much more comforting for you to see what's going on, mm-hmm. for the baby to have mm-hmm. the comfort of you, right? I don't think that anyone should ever walk into a hospital room alone. Right. So either you go in with a doula or you go in with your partner, you go in with your sister, and their role is to keep watch. Mm-hmm. Right. It's not that we're going to assume that the doctor or the nurse is doing something against us, but they're there to keep watch because you are busy. You're busy giving birth. Like there's no way that you can pay attention to all these things happening.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, having somebody to advocate for you is super important, but it can be hard because culturally we tend to trust doctors, like they know best.
That's another mm-hmm. thing in our culture that we have, but it's like, listen to the doctor, but the doctor doesn't know you. The doctor probably doesn't even know your name. They have to read the file first to go to you, you know? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these things, they're really indoctrinated in us. And we have a huge fear of telling someone no, of telling someone, can you take a little bit more time and explain that to me in a way that I understand? Do I have other options? Can we wait? And so a lot of times, like, becoming pregnant is the first time where people realize that either A, that they can say any of those things, or B, that they can just simply walk away and find another provider. And that's crazy for a lot of people. What I say too is, like, we spend ample time like searching something on Amazon, reading all the reviews before we buy it, but we don't do that with our doctors or our pediatricians. It gets a little crazy. Yeah.
It's a lot. I mean, it's important to know that you can actually question your doctors and you can actually ask for things.
And it doesn't mean that you're going to have a fight with them.
Right.
You know, it just means that you want more information to make a decision that's going to affect you.
Exactly.
Mothering is, nobody knows how to do it. Nobody knows how to do it, but we've been doing it for millions of years. Right. So we're going to get it right. And in some ways, this trusting to be able to say to a nurse or to a doctor, no, I need my baby, not your baby. It's my baby. Yeah. I'll listen to you. You can explain it, but it's our bodies. It's our baby. It's our experience. And I do think that there's a powerful thing that happens when you, as a mother or with your partner, know how to question your medical professional. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be yelling and angry.
No, of course.
But bottom line, it is your body and it is your child.
On that note, I actually, because of the pandemic, when I realized I was pregnant this time around, I liked my OB from the last time, but I am in Queens, so I didn't want to go to the city. So I went to an OB near my house. And because I had a miscarriage last year and my first pregnancy, I had low progesterone. And the second time around, I had low progesterone. Mm. And this time around, I was like watching it. And then finally, when I got the numbers, they were like, oh, you know, you don't need to go on progesterone. It's not a big deal. Your numbers are fine. I asked for them specifically, and they were the same numbers as my first pregnancy. And like her knowing that I had had two pregnancies where I was on progesterone and one that resulted in miscarriage, like, why wouldn't you listen to me? And she's like, you know, I'll send in a script for you if you want it. But like, I had to fight for it and I didn't like that.
Right.
Mm. And I was like, nah, like I'm not even.
Yeah.
Right. But that means that there, that you can actually, it, medical doctors, you don't have to just take the only one. And that's that's another part of the power experience where you're just like, you know what? Nah, I'm not feeling this person.
Right.
Yeah. I got to be with this person. And that is part of what I'm trying to say, which is the beauty of the intuitive work that motherhood does involve and that womanhood involves.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it happens a lot, and it happens a lot more to Latina, to Black women, to anybody from a misrepresented group, especially if you are queer and you have a queer partner that's present. A lot of these things we're like, oh, like that is such a horrible story. It's happening to people of color, to people who are queer, who are trans. And the reality is that the medical system, as we know, the medical industrial complex, obstetrics, gynecology, was founded on the experimentation of enslaved African women. So off a basis of that, that is saying that we don't trust your body. We don't trust that your body can keep your baby safe. We're in a situation where, like, Jeannie, you had a miscarriage. Maria, you had a cesarean. You were under general anesthesia. I had a cesarean. So we're like the stories that people don't want to hear, but it does happen, you know?
Yeah.
And even then, that doesn't mean that all of our pregnancies are pathological. It just means that we needed some medical attention.
I'm just going to bridge us into talking about the quote unquote, often viewed as negative parts of pregnancy. Because Maria, you mentioned you had miscarriages and you and I have talked extensively about miscarriages and infertility.
Yep.
So I think the hardest part for me within our culture is how isolating all of those things feel, because I dealt with infertility and I couldn't get pregnant for almost 2 years and we did everything. And my family didn't understand it. They didn't get it. Like, my Dominican parents were like, you know, why don't you go see this doctor who can tell you about positions and la, la, la. And I'm like, really, Ma?
God.
Like, really? Like, that's not what you say to somebody who is month after month after month, like, taking medications and, you know, getting tests and like, but like, I ended up hiding all of like the stuff that we did because it's just like, it's not something you talk about.
Yeah. When it comes to like miscarriage and infertility, we have like adopted also the perspective that we're super fertile, that we're spicy, that we just are a family, or we all come from big families and we want big, you know, we want big babies and all of this. And you're kind of just like, I don't know, right? Like, I don't know about this. The reality is a lot of us are also here in the United States, where the culture is shifting. So we have adopted different perspectives around families, around children, around pregnancy that often is in conflict with the culture that we were raised in and the culture that we're from.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Oh my God. Okay. So I'm going to be honest. Because I mean, at this point in my life, I know many women who never could
conceive,
were able to for whatever reason. And by the way, I had two abortions. I do not hide that. I had two miscarriages. I don't hide any of the loss that comes with it. But I guess what's happening for me is because I had such a hard time trying to get pregnant, it was so difficult. There was so much loss around it. That's why I do. I'm like, oh my God, it is in fact a little bit of a miracle when it happens. Coming up on Latino USA, we continue our conversation about the realities of pregnancy before and during the pandemic. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. And when we left off, we were talking about all the positive and not so positive aspects when it comes to pregnancy and the miracle that birth really is. We're going to pick up that conversation now.
You know, I never fully appreciated what a miracle birth was until I struggled. And we did end up getting pregnant naturally on a break from treatments. But it's funny because while on the inside you're quietly dealing with miscarriage or infertility, people on the outside either don't know what to say or they say all the wrong things. Everybody tells you, relájate, tú sabes, you know, just relax, you're too stressed, rezale a Dios. And then you have to deal with the other side where like, when are you going to have kids? When are you going to have kids? And then when you do have the kid, it's like, y el hermanito. And like, I mean, I had like my aunt ask me right after I had the miscarriage. She didn't know I had a miscarriage, but she was like, y le van a dar un hermanito a Martin. And I'm like, dude. I was like, actually, I just lost had so a miscarriage last week. But
tú le dijiste.
Yeah, I did. I told her.
Good.
I did.
Thanks for asking. Those are questions. Our people, man. I mean, especially Dominicans. I'm like, yo, like those are things you just don't ask people. You don't ask people when are they gonna have a baby. Like that's so personal. Like that's you asking me when's the next time I'm going to have sex. Do I even want to have sex right now? Like that's none of your business. You know what I'm saying? Like you don't know. It's so inappropriate. So inappropriate. So I think again, I think a lot of this is una cierta confianza that we tend to have with one another that we're gonna just like say whatever is at the top of our mind, which sometimes is just like fun. And jokey, but when it's regarding manners like this, when it's our bodies, like it's just we need to like completely shift that. So what do they tell you? Bueno, you know, dale gracias a Dios que tú tienes que tú estás embarazada y va a tener el hijo y qué sé yo qué. And you're like, sí, gracias a Dios. Exactly. Hey,
God bless you. Thank God that you're going to be able to have a baby. Tantas mujeres
que no pueden tener el bebé y tú sí. I like to think that, yeah, I didn't like that. I didn't like that my aunt asked me when's the next child and I had a miscarriage last week, right? Mm-hmm. And the more that we say it out loud, the more that people are going to change, right? Like, maybe your aunt won't ask you that again after mm-hmm. this one, right? She's like, y el tercero. Like, maybe that's not going to come out of her mouth because she
Fingers
knows.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's definitely coming from, unfortunately, stereotypes about our identity as females and women, that we can have multiple children, that we want multiple children, and that, you know, we don't talk about how hard it is to get it. We're just going to be thankful when it happens. Well, we can talk about how hard it is, and we also want to talk about that we're happy that we got our baby. But it really does a disservice to us when we shame ourselves into that isolation, right? Into like saying, I can't talk about what happened to me because it's not a good feeling. We kind of like, we don't allow ourselves to be whole people. And we're neglecting our ability to evidence and show that we have a full range of emotions. You know, that we can say we're happy, that we're sad, we're excited, or we're nervous, or we're anxious. Like for me, era la ansiedad. Yo tenía una ansiedad profunda. I was like, I'm bringing a baby into the world. My partner's back. I'm bringing a black child into this world. Oh God, there's nobody around. Like what was going to happen to my body? Oh shit. You know, it was extremely overwhelming. And I have three older sisters. Did I talk to them about it? No, you know?
No, and you know, Marie, I wonder, because like you've been very open about your miscarriages and stuff. Like for me, it took me a while to like process everything because I didn't understand it. Like, especially since I'm kind of like nerdily scientific, like I couldn't wrap my head around it. But somebody sent me a link for like a free mm-hmm. group sessions for miscarriages mm-hmm. and you could come with your partner. And so I brought Ernesto and I'm all like, you know, gringa, because this is my like gringa side, showing up at like group therapy to talk about my miscarriage.
Yeah.
And Ernesto like he went with me because he went for me, like to support me. But like he's Peruvian. So like that's not a thing really. So, you know, I wonder why those things aren't a thing in Latin America. Like, why aren't we a more open? Did you talk, Maria? Like, how did
you
Well,
look you at what is the word for miscarriage in Spanish? Mm. La pérdida. Mm-hmm. It's the loss. Mm-hmm. And so you have to talk about this loss. And it is a very sad thing. I mean, my closest family, I think, knew. But it was, and I had one right after the other. So by then it was like, well, and yeah. You know, will it ever be able to happen? But I remember that I wrote about it in my motherhood memoir, Raising Raul, precisely because I've always been about just removing the stigma from these things. It's a loss. And mm-hmm. so while we don't talk about it, there is a way in which we do name it for what it is. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, Jeannie. I mean, the thing about miscarriage is that when you realize it, what is it? One out of every three women has experienced right. at least one?
Hella women.
So yeah. many people, yeah.
Hella women have experienced miscarriage. So it's yeah. crazy that we don't talk about it.
As we're talking, my hunch also is that, you know, given that in Latin America, right, like where we're from, like whether you're Cristiano, Católico, like religion's a big thing. And mm-hmm. I think it has framed and shaped how we express our guilt, our shame, all the negative feelings. Like you're supposed to go and like, again, ask God, you're supposed to pídele a Dios, you know, you're mm-hmm. not supposed to like talk to your friend about it. Like, and you might, but even still, even especially with family though, it's like, it's not welcome. And I think it's again, because we don't want to hold those feelings.
And we need to hold those feelings. And like we've been discussing in terms of family dynamics and how open we are with these feelings that are super complicated. So, for example, in my own family, mi prima in Mexico went into deep postpartum depression and no one in Mexico knew what to do. And claro. She was right. very, right. very lonely. And so I'm hypersensitive. So I appreciate what you're saying.
Around depression and psychologists and therapy and all that. Wah-wah.
And depression
and
pregnancy.
You can't add depression to like pregnancy. Yeah. And that's a thing that I struggle with in our community is that si tú quieres hablar de tu depresión, right? Like, if you want to talk about the feelings you have, no se sabe hablar. Le dice, no, rezale a Dios, pídele a Dios.
God will help you. Right.
God will help you through. And I'm like, well, God is testing me right now. Like, God is testing me right now. and I'm not feeling it, you know? And so my thing also is...
I'm getting an answer here.
No, where is he at? You know, yeah. My thing also is that it's not just depression and it's also not just postpartum. So for me, at this point, like had I been working with a professional, like a therapist, we would have made a plan for postpartum because I was already experiencing depression prenatally. I wasn't very real. It was just like... For me, the idea of bringing a child into this world, this is right before Trump got elected too. I was like, something just didn't feel right for me, right? And the entire time, there was a lot of self-doubt and I thought I had the tools to cope with what was going on. But honestly, I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything right. Because when you become a mother, when you become a parent, you don't know anything. This is an experience that's unique to you. To your body, to the little family that you're forming. And so much of what we're told is a generalized perspective.
I have to say, one of the most important things I learned from a therapist, if it is not good for me to speak to my mother this week, I don't have to talk to her.
Exacto.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Really? If it's bad for you, like if it causes you anxiety... Can't. Then you don't have to pick up the phone this week. You don't have to do it this week.
And feel bad about it.
I think it's important for our culture to know because you assume you have to pick up or call because it's mommy. But it just goes back to knowing what's good for you in terms of your family, your doctors, and making sure you are your number one priority.
My hope and goal is that, you know, I hate saying silver lining, but I'm going to use it right now. Anyway, that with the pandemic, people are being called into, some people, not all, right? But being called to question how we are receiving care, how we're going about forming our family, the decisions we want to make in regards to that family. So my hope is that we, you know, try to do things different. And I think we have to, you know, because how we've been doing it is clearly not working. So.
Right. You know, it's interesting because people didn't stop having babies. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of COVID babies. I feel like everybody I talk to is pregnant right now. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of articles, too, about the mental health of a lot of pregnant women during this time. Mm-hmm.
I feel like the mental aspect has been hard for me because the timing is weird. Like the world is in chaos. There's so many external factors. And then I'm navigating appointments alone with a ton of extra precautions and rules and worrying about getting COVID myself because I do, in fact, have to go to these appointments. And then, you know, my parents aren't going to be able to come. We're not going to have any help. And all of that is mentally draining.
I have seen women in the park next to where I live and I see them pregnant and I see them wearing a mask. And I have to say, Jeannie, it is, you know, on the one hand, I'm like, well, I'm really happy that people are having sex during the pandemic. So that's a good thing. Like, I'm really happy that people were able to be getting it on.
Found something to do. Yep.
Found something to do, you know, found passion. But there is a part of me that my heart does sink when I see a pregnant woman with a mask. Because I'm just like, God, that has to be so lonely. But I also think Jeannie, are a part of history. You are a survivor of this pandemic in the sense that you're mothering and working and every during a pandemic, carrying a child, and you will give birth during a pandemic. Your child will be marked as a survivor in a beautiful way. And we're not going to live like this forever, even though it feels that way right now. But there is a very particular psychological, spiritual experience of being pregnant in a pandemic that I cannot even imagine.
It's hard too, because if you think of all of the things that I just told you, like I see people, I'm on in these mom groups and I see people posting like, you know, should we wait till after the pandemic passes to try to get pregnant? And in my head, I'm like, I don't have that luxury. Like I didn't, I know what it took to get my first. I know I had a miscarriage last year. I know that I'm approaching 40. Like not everybody has the luxury to wait. So like there, it might seem like there's a lot of COVID babies, but at the same time, like you have to take into account what every person has gone through, like their pregnancy journey. So,
yeah, I think also right now, like my biggest tip to people who are pregnant and are navigating having a baby during the pandemic and having little to no help after they have a baby is that it's comparable. Like when you have a baby, you're going to quarantine anyway. So you think of it that you've had a lot of practice being alone. And so I think that the conversation then is like, who is around, like within like walking, driving distance that might not necessarily enter your home, but still can show up for you, right? Can they run certain errands? Can they drop off meals? Can they organize a meal train? Can they do things that would take you outside of the house you're not comfortable with? So if there's ways for people to get creative and figure out how to still stay in community and form their own village, like, eso importante, because to have a baby by yourself with no one around, which is honestly what I experience in many ways. And it's been affected for us, particularly, you know, lo proceso migratorio, like our family just isn't here. Capitalismo, people have to work, right? Like people aren't just available as we thought they would to form a village. Our world is not set up to support family units. And that's also why people are like, well, should I have a baby? Because there's no way for me to still exist as a human being, exist as a working person, and have a child. It's very hard. Now, are people doing it? Absolutely. We're figuring it out, and I'm one of them. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't have to be this hard. Mothering shouldn't have to be this hard. No.
Can I just say, as the elder?
Dinos, por favor, tell us.
Well, that
wisdom.
That also women have been doing this for millions of years.
Yeah.
That we have, actually. That we do make it. That we have the answers, that we are much stronger than we could ever imagine. And I think that in some ways, that's the essence of motherhood, is to believe in our strength and to be that pillar that, you know, for many of us, if we were lucky, our mothers were. And I think that is like the essence of motherhood, is you are a lot stronger than you think. You can handle more than you think. You can carry more on your shoulders than you think. Doesn't mean that you're not exhausted, emotional, that you're going to cry, that you're going to feel overwhelmed. You have to acknowledge all of that. But also, moms are survivors. Moms are survivors. Power to the both of you as young moms and working Latinas.
I wonder, just on a final note, how can we as a Latino community kind of like support pregnant women better and support the mental part better and open up and talk more?
Asking questions is nice, but listening is even better. You know, like if there's a way for us to enact a kind of like a cultural shift in where we don't just praise the pregnant body and shame the postpartum body, in a way that we are like, you know, I'm so thankful for you for bringing us another human being. What can I do for you? Right? Without giving you advice, but like literally, what can I do for you? Or like just dropping off something without expecting anything, right? I think for us, it's, you know, it's a lot to unpack in terms of like our cultural attitudes, but honestly, our roundtable right now is something that we're doing, right? Like bringing it out loud, talking about it out loud, and not having private conversations is a big one, right? Like losing that shame of like saying, you know, I had a miscarriage, I can't tell no one, is huge, right? So even Maria and Eugenie talking about it with me is a big thing. It's like someone listening is like, yeah, I actually just had a miscarriage too, and I haven't really talked to anybody about it. Or people are too scared to ask me how I'm feeling about it, you know? So that's my hope and wish, is that we just like kind of shed those barriers that we've put on ourselves to talk with our loved ones about what we're feeling, so that they know, oh, espérate, like, they're going through something still, you know? And so it doesn't necessarily have to stay in the negative emotions, but we welcome them. We welcome all of them.
So what I think is that it's true. These conversations do help, because we are unzipped. We are talking about the things around pregnancy or miscarriage or loss or depression or postpartum that, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about. Certainly not many Latinos and Latinas. My message is, think before you speak. As a Latino or a Latina, when approaching a woman who is pregnant or who is in that, just got married or whatever, you don't need to add your two cents as to when are you getting pregnant, when's the next baby, because you don't know. If you have nothing beautiful to say to a Latina woman who is pregnant and or mothering, don't say it at all.
Boom. Mic drop.
Unless you're going to offer to cook dinner or to babysit, we're not interested. That,
right. Unless you're going to offer, then don't say
it. No me interesa.
This has been really great, ladies. Thank you so much for speaking candidly and open.
Thank you.
Thank you. I love this conversation. And congratulations to the both of you for being working professional Latina moms in New York City. Woo-hoo. You got this.
So crazy.
You got
this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This episode was produced by Jeannie Montalvo and edited by Marta Martinez. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Julieta Martinelli, Alisa Escarce, Alejandra Salazar, and Reynaldo Leaños Jr., with help from Raúl Pérez. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw, with help from Alicia Baitu. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Julia Rocha. Our interns are Jimena del Cerro, Emil Sequiros, and Gabriela Baez. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Y ahí los watch home. Hasta la próxima. Chao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. New York Women's Foundation. The New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, in the heart of the Amazon, Brazil's indigenous communities are working to preserve their cultures and languages. But it's an uphill battle, and the stakes are even higher now with the deadly spread of COVID-19.
The situation reminds a lot of indigenous folks of the crises surrounding health that indigenous people have faced for a very long time.
That's next time on Latino USA.